Andrew, welcome along. Episode 32, the third season of LOI Weekly. We're drawn to a close in the First Division, but still plenty of stuff to debate in the Premier Division and FAI Cup. Johnny Ward and Dan McDonald, as ever. Luke Byrne in studio. We will have Tommy Barrett interview that I did with him last night on Monday night. And we will have Andrew Reynolds as well about his future and the future of Waterford. Podcast for Public, Spotify, SoundCloud, Stitcher, iTunes, at LOI Weekly on Twitter, in association with Air Sport and Independent.ie. And congratulations, first of all, to a visibly hungover Luke Byrne.
Thank you, Johnny.
Yeah, what a weekend.
Ah, yeah, brilliant. Only really coming around today and recovering today, but it was...
You don't look it.
No, I don't feel it, to be honest, I'm lying. Yeah. But yeah, look, it was a great feeling on Friday and we enjoyed it.
They said he was going to retire, Dan, a year ago. Saying he was going to retire.
There was a social media
look at him
post.
Now.
Yeah. who said you were going to retire?
How long have you got?
There was an element of the Golden Cleric speech about it, you know, all these... who did say it, actually?
Ah, yeah, a good few would have said it to me and people asked me that, you know, people said to me that people had asked them and stuff, but... I suppose that was just the perception of me a year ago that I'd been injured a lot at Rovers, which you can't get away from. And I just tried to prove people wrong, I suppose, this year.
How would you assess your own season? I think I've seen Shells twice. You were centre back both nights. How did you get on throughout the season?
Yeah, I felt like I had a good season personally. Played all but two games, which was my main aim at the start of the year, to stay injury free and. Obviously play a new position, which I've been wanting to do for a while, so thankfully I was given the opportunity to do that and I stayed fit, and I think, you know, we've the best defensive record in the league, so I can take a bit of pride in that.
You could have gone north in the winter. I think that's probably one of the options that you had. So, like, what was your thought process with going the way that you did?
Well, like, to be honest, like, a year ago I was released by Rovers and I was, you know, I just had another operation. It was my fourth in a few years, so I didn't really have a lot of options at first. I spoke to a good few managers. People wanted me to come in on trial. People said, you know, they didn't string me along as such, but it was a couple of conversations. And then, look, Luke, I think you're too much of a gamble at this stage, which, look, I disagreed with, but I had to understand that that was where I was at. I was recovering from another injury. I'd been out around 6 months. So I knew I had to get myself going and keep myself, doing my rehab. Rovers are very good. They helped me do that. And, I was just waiting for the right opportunity. I had a couple of options to go up north. But to be honest, I would have been going straight into a season in the middle of January and I hadn't kicked the ball since the start of July last year. So as much as, you know, I wanted to get going straight away, at the time it was my only option, but I just stayed patient. I knew that, or I was confident something else would come up, and thankfully Shelburne rang and gave me an opportunity.
What's the weekend like? I mean, I speak to people involved in football, and you know anyone that's been involved with a sports team, like, it's the moments after victory that are the best moments. I mean,
Shane Dawson comes to mind.
Yeah,
the man was in tears. He was,
but like, he's got nothing to do with it. He's just a fan. Like, he just happens to be in the media. Like, you know, I mean, Shane was great.
That's incredible, Dan.
He was a great guest.
Players come and go. Fans are loyal.
No, that's true. But like,
it's unbelievable. Easy knowing he's not here.
My question
stood in for you last week.
Just to be clear, John, my question was about the moment that the team share together afterwards when they've achieved it together. With all due respect to Shane, he didn't make too much of a contribution on the pitch. So, like, I totally endorse supporters celebrating moments of success. But my question, if you've been listening, was about the moments that a team shared together afterwards. Like, that's, and people always, those 10, 15 minutes in the dressing room afterwards. Like, how much do you enjoy those moments? I mean, how did it feel?
The hour kind of after the game was strange because, like, I knew a few of the lads, so I wanted to shake their hand, but couldn't really get to any of them because the fans come onto the pitch, and then you probably look for, you know, your teammates and your staff to give them a hug and just a look of, thank God we've done it. But then it's even difficult to get to them because there's fans on the pitch and everyone you bump into is hugging you and kissing you in some cases. Mm. But, like, we went into the dressing room after all the kind of scenes and the pitch had died down and, you know, there was singing and dancing and champagne everywhere. And then it was just a kind of, you know, it was just like...
That, yeah.
Like, relief was the overwhelming feeling, I think, because obviously people had tipped us from early on and, you know, people thought we'd walk it, but that obviously wasn't the case. But it was just a sense of, like, thank God we've done it.
Mm. So what's Saturday like then?
Saturday was a continuation of Friday. Friday back to the bar in the stadium and got to meet a lot of the fans and stuff, which was great. The one thing I couldn't believe was just how many people saying thank you. Like, that was the common thing. It was thank you. And I think that's when you realise how much it means to people. You know, it's bigger than just us as a group of players playing in the Premier Division next year, because during the season you're quite single-minded and all you're thinking about is, I want to be in that league next year, I want to win this league. But you don't really realise the repercussions it has for the whole club and obviously the fan base. And I think I really realised that after the game. And then Saturday was great just to get out with the team and just, you know, have a laugh and the staff, and we enjoyed that and enjoyed Sunday as well.
Bit of a shout out from Dermot Connolly and Cormac Costello as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, Morsey found that link when we were sitting in Slattery's and Ballsbridge, so that was a good laugh.
That's Karen Moore, is it?
Karen Moore, he's a big Gaff fan.
Played his role on Friday night. We'll discuss that game actually shortly because I was at it as well. But after the game, I did speak to Ian Morris, and a particular the exuberant Shelburne member actually is heard at the end of this interview. I think it might be the kit man, but here was Ian Morris after the game.
Unbelievable. I've been promoted 3 times in my playing career, and that certainly tops a lot of them. What a feeling. Every decision is just huge, or every goal, every win is massive as a manager. You take everything personally. You take you have so much pride in it, and to go out and win the league is phenomenal for my first year. I've been blessed with a fantastic backroom staff. The players in that dressing room deserve every plaudit that's going to come their way. They've been unbelievable. The people at the club, there's volunteers at this club that do so much. It's like the Tracy that does the tea, her and her sisters, and Afro, and there's Eamon does the pitch. Joe Casey does phenomenal work as the chairman. Shay, there's Dave O'Connor, unbelievable. Youngest CEO around. And fantastic work. Dave Henderson. My job's been easy with these people around me, and every one of them deserves to celebrate this for quite a while.
Why does it mean more? Is it just because you're responsible for everything that you
Yeah, yeah.
You've got the hopes of everyone kind of on your
You have to manage every single detail, every bit of training, every bit of preparation, who's marking, your attacking sets, defending sets, free kicks, your shape. Everything comes down to you. And if it's not working, well, then it's on you. If you don't win, it's on you. It's the manager is the one who takes the flak for it. So it's just been a roller coaster. It's been a massive learning experience, and look, we've got our rewards.
Did you feel it all year? Because I mean, you were tipped to win it all year, so there must have been an expectation and pressure on it.
Huge, yeah, and the players deserve massive. I think from last December, everything was put on us. Everyone had the league wrapped for Shells, and the lads have had to deal with that. We've had to deal with, I think, every one of the opposition's best performances, I think, have come against us. And the players have got to take massive credit for that. And there hasn't been a lot positive written about us. And I think tonight we've a game to go, and we've already beaten UCD's points tally from last year, and everyone was lording over that team. But look, we just sat as quiet as we can, done our job, and like I said, the players deserve everything.
You must have felt some jitters when they equalised.
Oh, yeah, of course, massive. They were a threat all night. I thought Luke McNally was excellent for them. Chris Lyons was a threat. Mark Doyle running in behind. Very, very difficult team to play against. And when that went in, you're thinking, oof, because the pressure of the game, you can see it. You've seen it against Bray last week. It did affect us, and you're seeing it tonight. We just deeper and deeper, but then all it takes is just one. I think we've got a corner, and then we got on the front foot again for a while and scored the second, and then Larkin put it to bed at the end. So but yeah, they were in there every few minutes, yeah, when they equalised.
What did you make of the sort of yellow card? It initially could have been an own goal, and then his brother is sent off with some drama in the space of like a couple of seconds.
Yeah, to be fair, a couple of them walked a tightrope in the first half. I thought down the far corner, I don't know who it was, but they were certainly, they were only booked a couple of minutes before. They made a foul, and then they'd done another foul, and so it was one of them type of games. I thought that was one thing we talked about this year, or coming into tonight, was the discipline. Discipline and our shape, and then discipline in terms of your tackling, your talking back to officials, and I thought the lads were excellent at that to me.
Were you a League of Ireland fan growing up?
Was I? Yeah. The closest club would have been Bray. When I was a kid, I used to play for Shankill, which is right beside Bray, so we used to go out there, yeah.
So, like, would you remember when like Shells were lording it over everyone in the Premier?
Vaguely. Like the league of it. To be fair, I moved to England when I was 15, so kind of you're out of the loop a little bit. So,
I assume there's a lot of work in the next 3 months to get ready for next season. Now,
massive. You can start looking at at players properly. You already have to do your homework. I think you're letting yourself down if you don't do your homework throughout the year of who you could potentially sign, depending on what division you're in. And at least now we know where we stand, so we can start looking properly. Albeit to every obviously we've Limerick next week. We'll treat that game with respect. We won't be going out and looking and thinking everything's done. So we'll get past the Limerick game, and then I'll take in every Premier Division game I can till the end of the season.
He's a legend. He has brought Shells back to where they belong. Ian Morris, legend. And you know what? That's for all the doubters. Ha! Good man, Morrow. I love you.
I got to admit, Lukey, I thought you were very much on the ropes to start the second half. And I know Drogheda were very unhappy about the sending off, but the more I look at it, I think it was the second yellow card. But they went 3-5-2 to start the second half, and you were under the cosh for 10, 12 minutes.
Yeah, I thought that the start of the second half, yeah, they had a couple of chances. Then obviously there's the red card, which at the time I didn't think was a red card.
Did you know?
No.
Very honest of you, in fairness.
I just didn't think he led with his elbow. I know he'd made a few fouls in the first half, so a couple of people said to me maybe it was persistent fouling, but look, you'll take it. And then, yeah, we went 1-0 up, and you know, you were there, and I'm sure you've all seen games where momentum just changes and it's very difficult to wrestle it back. And look, it's only natural the pressure that was on us and what we were potentially, you know, about to achieve, that maybe a little bit of nerves set in and we sat a little bit deep, and they threw McNally up front, who caused a few problems, and they gave it a real go. But the more they threw bodies forward after the red card, there was a lot of spaces opening up, and I did feel that, you know, there was definitely goals there for us.
It was mad, Dan. I didn't actually appreciate it until watching Soccer Republic. McNally got the goal, but he actually cleared the ball kind of off the line seconds earlier, and he'd been thrown up front by Clancy at that stage because he had nothing to lose. And then when he scored, I was like, God, this could get very interesting. But then, in fairness, Oscar Brennan, who we've had in the show, kind of sealed it then with the second.
Yeah, I felt when we scored the second, I thought, you know, we've given them a bit of a second chance when, you know, they equalised, but I didn't think they'd get another one after that. And so it turned out.
The place was rocking. I thought it was great atmosphere. You know, like the view. I've never been in the press area as it is in United Park Ford, and you couldn't see anything really.
Oh, yeah, no, it's
so many poles, and there was this and that. But like just the colour and like the noise and the 387 stewards and Gardaí that Drogheda deemed necessary to be. I thought it was an amazing atmosphere.
But sometimes it's not always Drogheda that deemed that as well.
Yeah.
There's an operation around the game that dictates that's local police. Have an, you know, local
I know Gardaí. Things are going on in Drogheda as
well. Yeah, well, yeah, I know, but there's complications for it. I thought it was an interesting game. I was away, like, I mean, when you think about it, that's the league champions in 2006 and 2007, Premier Division champions playing each other in a game of substance. And it seems like both clubs have, I think actually the Shell story now, it seems like they're ready to properly come back. I know they've had near misses, like including one against Limerick, the Colin Scanlon one that got Dundalk up back in the day. And I know they were briefly up and they went back down as well.
It's six years.
Yeah, and you know, maybe they weren't equipped even at that stage really to go up. And it feels like maybe, look, you're on about people saying thank you, that I don't know, there seems to be a bit more momentum around the Shells thing this time. I don't know, is it just, you know, has some of the fan base got a bit older? The ones that were kids when Shells were ruling the roost the first time around, and now they're at a different stage of life, and all of a sudden there's a sense of real appreciation of it. And I think they are probably going to come back and make a crack of it, as opposed to, I don't know, just the last time they were there, but they weren't really there. You know, like the crowds weren't great. It just didn't have that momentum. And it's funny, like, I just wonder, you know, I guess Dundalk came back after a period in the doldrums and it sort of rejuvenated them a bit, that long spell. It actually, maybe that long spell in the first division, which nearly kills the club at the time, but it actually might strengthen its core in a sort of a weird way.
Totally agree. Yeah.
And you would hope, I mean, Drogheda have got a chance in the playoffs as well. I mean, that's the best crowd they've had in a long time too. And the way the things panned out with the 10-man sort of second half, that I don't think they went away. I don't think the floating fans who went there probably would have went away really disappointed, going, oh Jesus, you know, I think they probably will still be well received in the playoffs. So hopefully it's those two clubs are pushing back, because I mean, they do represent a particular time in history, you know, and like this period where champions won the league and then went bust almost just as quickly. And I think a lot of people around those towns, in the case of Drogheda, were soured by League of Ireland football, and they went off it, you know, I think because just of the fall being as spectacular as it was. So that's probably the value of the first division, that actually it can be a division where clubs can use it to maybe, I don't know, find their sort of their purpose again.
Well, like, we will listen to the Tommy Barrett interview, but an awful lot of what you said there is consistent with what he talked about being down there and rebuilding. But I don't get the impression Shells are going to go mad next season in terms of like throwing money at it. Or are you going to go full time? Are you going to stay the model you have, do you think? Or
No, we won't go full time, but we'll definitely take on an extra night. So we'll still be on the training pitch as much as a Rovers or a Pats. It'll just be in the evenings. And I think, you know, there's the extra 9 games, and we're going to need that extra day's training next season. Obviously, this year there was only 1 game a week, so there probably wasn't as much of importance on training as much as we would next year. But in terms of like the squad and stuff, fuck, that's not up to me. That I won't have anything to do with that, obviously.
Are you under contract for next season?
No, I'm not. No. Okay. But,
and in general, are there lads, like, most of them out of contract?
Yeah, majority would be, I'd say. Yeah, probably a bit more than half, maybe. Mm. But like, I think we've got the bones of a team there that can compete next year, and I think I always believed it, but I think we maybe proved it in the Bowls game. Obviously, we should have won, but I think we showed we can match Premier Division outfits.
It sounds like you might be expecting to stay though.
I have absolutely no plans to leave. You know, it was a great year to be involved in, and I would like to be involved in building on it next year.
When I started off in Dublin, I used to live opposite Talca Park, and I saw a lot of the old faces that would have been knocking around. That's like, it goes to 20 years ago now, and a lot of those old faces. What you said there though really resonates. How much it meant to them people. You could tell, like, it really, really was a relief, celebration, and the joy of sport. You know, I was at the Curra on Sunday, and the fundraiser for Pat Smullen. Sport can be a wonderful thing, and it really was a lot more in the game on Friday night, I felt.
Definitely. Like, I think someone who kind of personifies that is Johnny Watson, the kit man, who's gone viral on social media over the weekend. But like, I had a conversation with him on the way home from the Cove game when we got beaten. And look, we still had a nice cushion at the top of the league, but I think the pressure came on a little bit after that one. And he was just talking about, like, you know, what it would mean to go up and the importance of it, and telling me how many years he's volunteered at the club. And, you know, we were getting home from Cove at 2 or 3 in the morning. He was up at 5 to go to work. And they're the kind of people that, you know, you speak to on Friday and you really, you know, it hits home how important it was that we got promoted.
And your next game, final game of the season, is against Limerick at the weekend. Saturday night kickoffs in what effectively looks a complete dead rubber around the games, actually.
It's a bit frustrating, actually, but the 4 playoff places.
It's very, very unlikely this might happen.
I think it's just a quirky set of results.
It's kind of down to Longford losing. We'll go through the results, actually, from last week. Longford lost at home to Bray, which meant that basically Longford couldn't catch draw at a match.
But the real one was Cavan Teely beating Athlone to make sure
that Bray couldn't catch them. Because the second and third didn't really, as you say.
No.
So the results were Cavan Teely 3, Athlone 1, Drogheda 1, Shelburne 3, Galway United 7, Cove 1, Limerick 4, Wexford 1, Longford 1, Bray 2, Galway United 3, Limerick 2. That was last night. And I'll talk about that actually after this. But before the game, I did speak to Tommy Barrett, and I suppose with Tommy Barrett this season, it was a case of, where do you start?
So we've 2 games left in the season. It's been very difficult for you on many levels, I suppose. And what's your thought process at the moment?
It's, you know, you'd wonder, is there an industry in the country, you know, after the 2 years, you know, you put down so far. It's been difficult, you know, you're losing, you know, I think someone had said the other day, I've lost 30 players, you know, over the 2 seasons. So it's been very difficult, Johnny, yeah.
You've mentioned that a few times about the industry in this country, and I think you feel frustrated by the lack of direction maybe from above in terms of where this league is going.
Yeah, look, I think, you know, now's the time to put an effort in, and everyone has to come together, you know. Like, we seem to have a lot of infighting between various stakeholders, and there's a lot of politics. I think everyone needs to set their egos aside now and sit down and make it better, you know. It has to get better, you know. And look, they're doing a lot of workshops, and we'll see what becomes of them, you know. But there has to be, even after that, there has to be an ongoing review. I would say every couple of years there has to be a review process and see how we build it. You know, you have to, I understand you have to, it's not going to be done overnight, but if a plan is put in place, you can't just stick to that plan then for 20 years, you know. You have to review it. Is it working? Are those things going to be done, you know, and have a proper structured review of it? Because, look, I'm involved with Limerick, you know, geez, I don't know how many years, but it must be 17, 18 years now, or certainly 15. And, you know, we haven't, it's the same thing. you know, like 2003 or 4, you know, we were, you know, and before that, the 10 years before that, there was lads getting, you know, cars driving themselves to matches and stuff, like, you know, and not having proper equipment and kit and stuff like that. And, you know, and, you know, players, obviously, you know, it's well documented, being unpaid and expenses and wages and stuff. And that was happening 15 years ago. You know, that can't keep happening. And look, I don't think we are the only club where that's happening, or it's very low income stuff. Other clubs have had the same the last few years. And it's been very difficult. But it has to change, because it gets frustrating. You know, you think it's changing, you think you're turning a corner, but, you know, we have to set out a plan. And I would even, you know, where are we going with the likes of the universities and stuff? Do we, you know, we've no pyramid system as well, you know? So that's a massive thing as well. There's so much here in my head, I suppose, you know, that it just has to change. And hopefully this is the time, you know, we're 4 or 5 months into a review process now, so hopefully it can happen.
Sure, you were training in UL, and obviously then you were turfed out of there because of things off the pitch, and that must be deeply frustrating. Also this season you were going quite well, and then financial troubles beset you, and then you obviously started to slide down the table because you couldn't pay your players.
Yeah, look, we were training in UL when I first came in, in 2018, you know, but I saw after 2 months that, you know, obviously we hadn't the finances to keep training there, because, you know, it's expensive enough to train the rent facilities full time. So we went to Hogan Park in 2018. So, and, you know, we borrowed a couple of pitches off of like Savannah Cotty, and we were training down Star Rovers, Kings Island Astro six-a-side pitch this year as well at times. You know, so look, we had a very low budget when I came in. That was cut further in 2018. Look, I'm not taking any, you know, I'm not saying that.
But you're sixth at the moment. You could have been thereabouts.
We could have been. I think we were heading. We were going well. We were in. We were in fourth position, I think. We were heading before the draw of the game. We were fourth and not too far. Maybe fifth. We weren't too far behind. I think we were a point or two off. And it has been, you know, once we lost against Drogheda, we won up, we lost 4-1, and after that then the heads just went, and we dropped a lot of points. You know, last week was our first win, and we had a draw against that loan before that, so it's been really difficult. But the likes of Wexford there, you see them, they're struggling as well. But in saying that, for us to be finishing, you know, at least a minimum 8 points ahead of Galway, I think that's a fantastic, even if we didn't lose players, that's really good with the resources and the players they have. You know, I think that, you know, we're not going to finish anything less than 8 points, so that's good for us.
My understanding is, under the current regime, you're not going to get a licence next season, and my understanding also is that the owner of the club has alienated an awful lot of people in Limerick. How have you managed the situation there, and what is the future of Limerick? Will Limerick even be in the Premier in the First Division rather next season?
I'd like to hope so. I'd like to think so. I think, you know, there was went out on social media today, I know that Baker Tilly are looking for expressions of interest, so that has to be in by Friday. You know, it's been difficult. It's been difficult to manage the whole situation. Obviously, Sean Russell there today as well. You know, Sean's a great lad, and you know, he was an amateur player playing for expenses, and you know, I don't like to see that. You know, I don't want to be a part of what's happened to him, and you know, I'm liaising with him as much as I can around it. And you know, the lift have paid for his first operation, so you know, we're hoping we can get that sorted. But even the likes of that, you know, that needs to be sorted, and that needs to be sorted as soon as possible. Those have been the most difficult things, you know, to deal with. But look, we're hoping that, you know, I think the club has gone into examinership, and the chairman has put into examinership with the hope of hopefully it surviving, and that's what all we can hope for. But I think, look, the FEI, I don't think will not want to see a Limerick team not in the league, so hopefully we will be in the league, Johnny. Yeah.
With all due respect to Pat, who has put in a lot of money into Limerick FC, has his time come?
Look, that's difficult. You know, it's not. Look, he's there on his own this year, and you know, we've lost some good administrators behind the scenes, you know, with other commitments they've had. You know, they were there as well with him on the board, and he's there on his own now. And you know, I'm reluctant to say anything, you know, too bad about the man. You know, I wouldn't do that, because I don't think it's fair to personalise it. You know, it's the club, and the club isn't running properly at the moment, and it's, you know, it's tough for everyone involved. You know, it's it is what it is. You just have to try keep going and hopefully that something better will come out of it. Like, we've got a lot of young players. I think whoever's there next year, I keep saying that. You know, I suppose I would have wanted to just stay young this year and as young as possibly could. But, you know, I was given KPIs to try finishing in the top four. And to do that, I signed a few experienced players in a very low budget. And they've been good for me and we were heading that way. But, you know, unfortunately, when, you know, you have all the incidents like we mentioned there earlier and all them things kind of drain you over the year. Yeah, they certainly do. You know, it's been a tough 2 years, but it's been an experience, Johnny. Anyway, you know, I've learned a lot from it, you know, and what not to do. You know, I've made mistakes as well myself, you know, obviously I'll hold my hand up to that.
But you've put money into your own pocket this time, in certain times this season, to keep the thing afloat. Is that right?
No. In fairness, no. You know, I haven't really. You know, but we're on a shoestring, and it's you know, we've made a lot of cutbacks and everything like that. But it's tough going. You know, trying to keep it going 3 or 4 or 5 days a week, and you have all the negative publicity and everything that goes with that. It's not great for, you know, I have another job as well, and I have a family and stuff, and not like the other players as well, and you know. It's difficult in that sense, but in saying that, you know, we're only doing it, I suppose, because we love it and we're competitive. You know, probably, look, I thought about going in June myself because it was so messy and it was so long, but that competitive side comes out in you. You know, you're doing well, you're in fourth position, and then what do? You walk away now with 2 or 3 games to go. Well, that's not me. You know, we've made the decision to stay. We'll do that. You know,
where will you be next season though?
Look, you never know. You know, you don't know in football. That's the way it is. You know, like I'm 40 years of age. You know, so I'm young in management terms. But I suppose, you know, I've always been part time. As in, I've always had another job, even though I was full time in the football. You know, I was doing as many hours as anyone else. But even when I was playing, I just never saw the industry here to go full time. It's really brave out of lads to do that. And I think fair play to them that do that. But, you know, realistically, how many teams can you go full-time with in this country? You know, you have the Dundalks and Shamrock Rovers, you know, who are doing very well and properly run clubs. But other than that, it's very difficult to give your full commitment. And to be honest, in the Premier League especially, you need to be full-time if you're going to do it right. And you have to be speaking to the players daily, and you have to be...
The potential is there in Limerick, though.
It is. It's certainly there, but, you know, it's going to take a lot of work, and it's going to take a lot of insight, and it's going to take a lot of planning. You know, in Limerick, we haven't got a place to train for any of our teams. You know, if you look, we're hiring places all the time, or we're hoping on goodwill, and that's for all the academy teams as well, or the schoolboy teams. And schoolboy league is the same. They don't have a place they can play. You know, they're playing out in UL, and the junior obviously have Jackman, but even at that, they don't have places to their own grounds to train in. You know, so we need, I think, like a soccer specific ground or area to train, and we all go in together and we all put our heads together, and we need to fix those small things first before it goes to a nationwide level.
Just the images of the Gardaí coming to the ground as well, for the young players who were there, and young lads who, I think one player might even have pulled out of the club the following morning on the advice of his parents, because these are kids who are brought into training, and you have cops coming down investigating irregular betting with guns sent down from Dublin, and like, that must have been absolutely horrible to deal with.
Yeah, look, it was. Look, I don't want to comment on the ongoing investigation, but, you know, it obviously wasn't nice. But I suppose at the same time, if something is happening, you know, we'd like to see, you know, we'd like to see justice as well. So, but yeah, it wasn't nice. It wasn't a nice experience. And I suppose, look, I can have a conversation about that another day.
Yeah, the whole thing must be very tough for you personally.
Yeah, look, it is tough, but, you know, you keep going. I consider myself fairly resilient. I'd like to think so anyway. And you keep going. But I don't want to be playing, getting the violin out. It is what it is. At the end of the day, it's only a game of ball as well. It's a sport, and you win some, you lose some, and that's what it should be all about. If we win or we lose, we should be talking about that, and we shouldn't be talking about this stuff. And that's the problem, you know.
Unfortunately, it's on Northern Ireland, it's in the front page of the papers.
Yeah, this is the problem. We shouldn't be talking about even any off the field stuff. I'm not just talking about that. We shouldn't even be talking about examinership or any of those issues. I should be here talking to you about football and football only. You know, and it might be a bit thrown in about budgets and getting players next week, or we can't afford that. But you know, I think from the top down, as I said from the start, it needs a massive overhaul, and hopefully, you know, Noel Mooney's the man, and the lads can do that. I think it'll be difficult, I think, because the way it's structured and all the politics that goes with it, and you're trying to keep everyone happy. In fairness to the FEI, I would say in the last number of years, they've got the, I know a lot of people aren't for it, but at least the elite leagues are in now, you know, or maybe the ages, some people are saying it's too much, and is it too much of a hindrance on clubs? But I still think that you have to start playing the best against the best. I think that's one of the better things that's happened now. Is there a gap? Do we use universities as reserves? Do we, you know, some lads were trying them in at 18 and they're not ready, you know, so do we create, you know, a real proper pyramid system? Like, we have a Munster senior league with all Cork teams. Should we have the junior teams looking to go in and to regionalise, like a North Munster and a South Munster, you know, and hopefully progress onto a first division, you know? So those things have to happen if we're serious about football in this country, because otherwise you might as well just go, all right lads, everyone play and have a game of junior ball and go out on a Saturday night and turn up on a Sunday. That's Sunday league stuff, and that's fine too, that's great, but you know, what are we at?
Yeah,
you know?
I suppose my concern would be between what's happened in terms of in the papers, but also in terms of the ownership of the club, how damaging it has been for Limerick going forward and trying to get people back. You know, I work in racing as well, and the Curragh trying to get people back because they've been alienated. And my concern would be Limerick FC, where it is for the future, because I think a lot of people are very disenfranchised now.
Yeah, they are, but we look, people will follow success, and if they think something is new is happening and there's a big boost. Look, when the current lads came in and took over the club, there was a big boost there, and we went back to the Marcus Field, and you know, there's potential there. We had 4,000 people at the playoff last year, you know. We were beaten well on the night, in fairness to Harps, but you know, we have that potential. People will come back, you know. But it might take time. Look, in fairness to Galway, you can see what they're trying to do here, and they're trying to build it again. And I believe we should have been doing that as well, particularly this year, and have a 2-3-4 year plan. You know, there's nothing wrong, like Shells. I think Shells are going up at the right time. You know, they didn't need to be going up the last few years. I think they needed to spend a few years in the first division. And look, sometimes we look at it and we call it a graveyard, and we call it this and that. But sometimes we need that division, and we need this division, and we need people supporting this division, and a lot of good young players are playing it, and that has to be the breeding ground. And you saw it with Wexford a few years ago as well, when Shane Keegan was there, and he was left his devices for 4 years, and he had a group and he gelled them together and they got up. Okay, they went straight back down, fair enough, but they never had the investment. But in a city like Limerick, if you had that same process where you have a lot of young players and you can keep them for, and Galway as well, I'd imagine, if you can keep them for 3 or 4 years together, you can build that, and you know, you can get something, and you can get momentum behind you, and you can go up that way, instead of what we done in 2016, where, you know, we walked the league. And you know, in fairness to Shells this year, I don't think they've done that. I think they've managed it quite well. You know, a lot of people said, yeah, they're bankers, but really, when you look at it like this, okay, they signed Kilduff and a few other lads like Oscar Brennan, but Kilduff was the marquee signing, but other than that, they signed very well. You know, they signed a lot of young lads and part-time pros that wouldn't have cost, I'd imagine, a massive amount of money. And even in the off-season, in the mid-season, they signed the two lads from Cove. You know, I would have signed them if I could as well, you know, two young lads in our region that, you know, Denzel and Jace, they're two great lads. Like, so, you know, that's the type of, it seems like they're running it right there, you know, and that's the type of model you need to go off. Like, you know, as long as they don't go gung-ho now and be talking about Europe for, you know, like what happened with us. Like, you know, and I think that was a big problem. We were talking about Europe too early. You know, we were 20 years in the first division and we were talking about going into Europe. You know, you gotta build it. You gotta build it, and it's like anything, it takes time.
He did also mention players that have left, Conor Ellis, gone to Ballynanty, players that were now not playing for Limerick and instead were playing obviously junior football. Now junior football has been very strong obviously in Limerick, but Dan, what do you make of that in general?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the whole Limerick story is fairly...
choose your words kind of wisely.
Deflating, I think. And there only is so much you can say about it, really. I mean, Tommy Barrett's probably in a difficult position to face questions about stuff that is ongoing. And I think that's the problem everyone faces in terms of discussing the topic, that you can't really get engaged in speculation around it. But what you can talk about is the broader picture, that, like, it's a couple of years back since Limerick had that run under Martin Russell. They actually ironically got relegated that year. But you did see the potential that is there, that was mentioned, you mentioned in your chat. And having been a sort of a, it's funny, like we spoke beforehand about how, you know, maybe Shells and Drogheda, you know, they've been rehabilitated. I mean, Limerick had looked like they had been, but within a very short space of time, they've gone back into a condition that's, you know, almost worse than it was before, because of some of the level of attention, or the nature of the attention that's existing around them right now. But it's frustrating, because you know that there actually is a latent interest there. Like, the interest that they generated that year, like, there are Limerick, when they have a big game, people will come out, but they have to believe in the club that's there, and it's impossible to believe in the club and the structure that's there at the moment.
Have you played in the Marcus Field?
Yeah, a couple of times, yeah.
Yeah, and when you see it, Dan, it's, I mean, I know, like, they've kind of ground-hopped a lot, but they have a great facility there if they could, like, have a sustainable club. And I suppose my two things are, whether or not there's any truth to the investigation or whatever, it'll stick in the minds of people that they'll just have their concerns about Limerick. But secondly, the club itself, the way it's been run over the last year, I think so many people have just been completely alienated by Limerick.
Yeah.
And they don't want to support that team
anymore.
Yeah,
and I find it disappointing. I mean, I remember sort of a decade ago or so, probably would have covered a lot of Limerick stuff around the time they were meant to play Barcelona. And I think around that time, actually, I think Pat O'Sullivan and the people there spoke up against the FAI, and I was sort of impressed by it. And I find some of the stuff coming from that end of things in the last couple of years to be very bizarre, even around, like, the, you know, investigations into the FAI and some statements by Pat O'Sullivan related to that. And clearly, you know, the FAI were probably anxious to keep Limerick going at certain points. And again, I don't want to get into speculating about various things, but they've become a bit of a disappointment. And we can't just have this cycle, though, as well, of, you know, a club being trouble and then you give a license to a new company, and like, that's what we've done over the last number of years in a number of different places in the country. A new trading company, and some very high profile ones like Cork, but there's others as well, you know, where, like, a trading company has changed and you sort of refresh and reboot. But, like, that still leaves a sour taste with certain people.
It leaves a sour taste with a lot of people who owed an awful lot of money.
Well, yeah, for exactly one thing. Exactly. So it's just not a great one. It's very hard to put a positive spin on it. Tommy Barrett obviously tries there, you know, and he will speak about, you know, young players that have been brought through and so on. But it's just some of the headlines that have been generated around Limerick. Even going back to last year with issues around pay and players and stuff. It's the Sean Russell case, obviously, this week, which has been mentioned as well, which is probably a difficult one to talk about as well, because I think the Sean Russell one probably raises a couple of broader issues as well. And this whole thing of people playing on amateur contracts in what's supposed to be a sort of a professional, semi-professional league, you know, it's probably fraught with potential complications. Now, it still shouldn't come to the situation that he's in, without a shadow of a doubt. But again, it's just an overall shit show, really. And it's very hard to be to call it anything other than that, really.
They have one more game. At the game last night, on a brighter note, Dan, Galway United, form team in the division. Lukey, I mean, probably avoided us at a good time. I think we've won.
If the season ended in 2023, you might get promoted. You know, you're building up a head of steam there, John.
Tom Moen was at the game on Friday night. Obviously, young Donald Higgins is on the radar of the 19s. And
just the 22 points he finished off the playoffs.
I know, it's utterly dismal. We're third last, but brilliant end of the season. Beat Cork City, brilliant performance against Shamrock Rovers, and have won, I think, 6 out of 7, if not 5 out of 6 anyway. And some of the young players, you know, if they can commit, and as well as that, Dan, I popped into the bar last night. What was the bar? Does talk he'll be back for next season?
So I did see some reference to you on social media saying good times ahead for Galway, and I was really wondering what that was about. Was it about the Comers? Was it about this? But it's just about the bar reopening.
And there are some Galway players who may or may not fancy coming back to Galway next season. Here's hoping anyway.
Nothing like actually, let's like a bit of idle talk about Galway to get you energised, yeah. Eh? Whatever happened to your Saudi Galway name, eh?
Oh, yeah, the Saudis are up to no good as well of late, and we'll have to get to that another. But to finish up actually on to finish up the first division debate, nothing to do with Shelburne, nothing to do with the playoffs, nothing to do with that. Your experiences of Terryland, the first game of season, I mean, it's a great place to play football.
Ah, yeah, it's brilliant. I've always liked going there, even with Rovers and stuff. Brilliant dressing rooms, proper stadium feel to it, always one of the best pitches.
A completely nonsense tangent. This absolutely. Has to be said. There's literally nothing to do with the...
We don't have a game for 5 months now or so. Yeah, like, you have to have some
maybe
hope.
You should space it out and bring Galway back in a month's time when they need it. Like, this is a completely ludicrous tangent. Okay. Get on to the Premier Division stuff here. Come on.
Results from last week, Dan. Bohemians 1, Waterford 2. What an unbelievable winner for the Blues. Just saw it earlier on. Really, really good goal.
They stood off him long enough, but it was a good strike.
Pats 0, UCD 0. Sligo 3, Harps 1. Now, we have an interesting situation here where it's not so much the narrative of Harps might catch Cork. It's like Harps could be in Stuck here because UCD could catch them. Well,
that's what Collie O'Neill, when he was here, I mean, he obviously still knew the fixtures off by heart. And, I mean, it's for Harps to collect the amount of points that was needed, they would need to put together the best sequence of the season. And clearly that's not going to happen. So yeah, it is the UCD Harps angle that is probably the more interesting one. That's a big point for UCD away. You're forgetting the EA Sports Cup final as well.
Yeah, so the EA Sports Cup final was obviously an absolutely brilliant game at Brandywell. We'll actually discuss that and the cup draw afterwards, but before all of that, but Waterford did beat Bow, as we mentioned, and more or less eased any fears that they had of getting wrapped up in the relegation struggle. And I spoke to Alan Reynolds earlier. I initially asked him how would he sum up the season so far, and also following on from that, how much of a killer was it that they did miss out on Europe this season?
I always felt the season would be difficult with the preparation, with signing players late, reporting back in with 12 players signed, then adding 2 more, 14, then a couple of injuries. So I kind of always felt that it would be an uphill battle, struggling to start well and that. Something was a little bit different last year, even though we did add a couple near the end of pre-season. So, we didn't start well. The first game against Shamrock Rovers, and we conceded late on. It kind of sums up our season a bit. And, you know, we've been very inconsistent, to say the least. But then there's been lots of chopping and changing. I mean, to lose Bastian Heary, Izzy, Damien Delaney for 3, Aaron joining another one, you know, in the middle of the season was a blow to everyone, not just on the pitch but off the pitch as well. Europe was a massive blow. Nobody seen it coming. I was working with the club actually to make sure we had a license. I was up at the meeting with the FAI about our license actually, and there was a lot of talk about Europe, so I was very surprised. Didn't see it coming. I know the owner didn't see it coming. The players, I suppose the ones that were here since last year, felt it, and obviously we've lost Bastian through it. Like, it's one thing that the reason he wanted to go was to play European football with Linfield and to get a taste of that. So, and obviously he was our talisman. So it hurt the likes of him and Izzy. And I think from that stage on, they were maybe looking, could they go further afield and test themselves at different levels. But also, when I spoke to some of the players about signing, I suppose the big attraction was playing in Europe. So, I mean, to sum it all up, it's been really testing for the players, testing for the staff, testing for myself. But I do feel that we'd be stronger for it. And we still have a few, you know, points to pick up to make sure we're safe. So that's the way I would see it overall, that it's been testing. And, you know, last year, I even looked at myself and I've learned a lot more this year than last year, that's for sure, and where we could be better and where I could be better. So that's the big learning thing from this year.
How great has the journey been as well? I know you've been away, you've had a good kind of story career, but being back at Waterford, what's that been like?
Yes, being at the club has been fantastic because, look, I've been away with different clubs for the last few years and always passed the RSC on my way to them, and, you know, I'd be thinking, would it ever happen there? And We really enjoyed it coming in the first year in the first division and to get up, and last year was a roller coaster, and I suppose a bit surreal, but it's really good. I suppose there's ups and downs of it when you're from Waterford, and it's like anywhere, and you're not doing well, you're facing it. If you're facing the public, facing people, no matter where you go, because you're from here, everyone, I suppose you have to listen to everyone's opinion. So I suppose that's the downside of it. You can't get in your car and just drive off, and you're living it every minute. The upside of it, I suppose, when it's going well, you're also getting the praise and that. So it's been fantastic. The facilities down here, the staff, everyone is really good and really loyal. And they're in it for the right reasons. They want to see the club doing well. But I suppose under the first year with Pat Fenlon being here, he was instrumental in I suppose, building the squad, the club, I would have thought, you know, and a great appointment by Lee. And when Pat was to go, it was definitely a blow to me and to the club, I would have felt. But look, it's been fantastic, and you know, you can see the buzz is back, and I know this year hasn't been as good, but there's a new generation coming in to support it, and it's important that we keep that generation and try and grow and bring in, you know, players early and get players signed and build on it.
Obviously, Lee Power as well, Alan. You know, he's been such a significant figure, I suppose, for Waterford. How important has he been? Like, what would happen without him?
Without Lee Power, I don't see Waterford continuing. That's my opinion on it. You know, we need him, you know, for the work he's, and we're grateful for him. So hopefully he sticks around and invests more and have that push for Europe next year. I'm not sure where he is at the minute with it. I know for sure that he's put a lot of money into it. So it's been difficult for him. But we need him to stick around and help us try and push on.
Yeah, and I got to ask you as well, where will you be next season? You know, will you be at Waterford? Will you be somewhere else? What's the vision at the moment?
All going well. I'll still be, the plan is I'll still be here at Waterford. That's the discussions I've had with Lee and over the last, I suppose, few months. So hopefully we can build on something, but I think a lot will depend on Lee's, what Lee will do going forward. So the plan is, as I said, stay here, try and build on what we've done. And I don't think without Lee Power, I don't think it'll be possible. So, as I said, I think a lot will depend on Lee.
From one club named the Blues to another, Dan, and blue is kind of the colour in terms of both these clubs at the moment, if you're to read a certain interpretation. I'm not sure what's going to happen with Waterford. I'd have concerns. It's been a very up and down season. Obviously, there was the European thing falling apart. In fairness, at least they've done well to consolidate and beat Bow is a good result, but I don't know, where is this going to go from here?
Yeah, I mean, it does depend on Lee Power, just from listening to what Alan Reynolds was saying there. And I mean, that is always the problem with a club that relies on the benefactor to keep things going. I mean, you are reliant on them. Now, you would hope, again, it's sort of like a recurring theme. I mean, Waterford, the fact they got, you know, from having 100 people at a game to having, I remember being down for the Cork game last year, and there's been a couple of other games where they've had like 3,500 people in the RSC. So again, it shows that people will respond if there's something there. So you would hope that if there is maybe a question mark over the ownership, that someone else will see the potential, or there's some grouping locally that can have a look at it. If it is the case that they might need some help. Yeah, like they've survived, but this is always a problem. Like, there's obviously discussions and debates around structures and stuff at the moment, and like a club that sort of finishes sixth or seventh, which, you know, Waterford are going to finish this year, so there's no European prize money. They might get into the chocolate cup. Like, you know, where do they go? You know, like they're in this limbo, and this is the problem that we face when you have teams at the top that are so dominant. And it's the club sort of it's like the squeeze middle or something, that they where do they go? Do they completely overstretch to try and catch up? That doesn't really make business sense, because how much would they have to spend to really to really challenge, say, the top two. I mean, they got into Europe, which was the natural progression forward for them. Was, well, at least you get into Europe and you recoup some of your money, and then that be taken away from them. It was pretty cruel. As much as it was, look at the rules, the decision was made, but just take that out of it. For
well,
now.
Also, he alluded to the players signing on the basis of playing in Europe.
Yeah,
that's the human level of it as well.
But I mean, well, something went badly wrong there. I mean, again, that's an FAI issue, really. Like, you have to play by the rules. I mean, UEFA made the call, ultimately, so there was obviously assurances given that were inaccurate, completely inaccurate. So it's obviously a massively complicated case, but it is the problem that the clubs in the middle of the Premier Division table face.
Just generally, I mean, Limerick and Waterford, you need strong teams from these, we've very few cities in this country, but Limerick and Waterford, what have you made of it in both, I suppose, particularly Waterford though?
Yeah, I mean, it's disappointing really from kind of a neutral's point of view to see kind of the fall away a bit this year. Obviously a lot is, like you said, dependent on Europe in terms of signing players and then losing players midway through the season. But we went down there last year a couple of times and the place was bouncing and it's a great facility. I know a couple of lads down there that speak really highly of the training ground, even going in the morning, having breakfast, your kit washed, stuff that maybe in the grand scheme of things isn't massive, but it's, you know, just shows how professional they were and they were doing things right. And the league needs as many teams competitive as possible, because looking at the moment, it looks like the top two are kind of pulling away quite quickly.
Yeah, like I was just looking at the table earlier. Bows are third. Like, Bows have lost 10 of their 31 games. So the third best team in the league has lost a third of its games, more or less. So like the gap is so big. But like if you have a league that doesn't really have any sustainable prize money model, unless you get into Europe, I don't know, Dan. Like, how is this going to be solved? Because like,
I know that's completely the problem.
Like, so you need a league with money in it,
Johnny.
Somehow.
Like, it's the 32nd part of the season over 3 years. Like, I'd say around two out of every three, we probably have the same chat. Mm. We can't just repeat ourselves. It's pretty obvious. It's a massive problem. I don't know. I mean, like, we're having discussions and debates around structures now. I mean, just changing the size of the league really matter if you're still faced with those fundamental sort of bottom line issues.
Absolutely.
related to funding and to, you know, the marketing and TV and etc. No, it doesn't change. So that's where we are. You know, that's where we are.
That 13 billion that Apple may or may not owe the government, some of that just could actually go to some good causes in Ireland, including sports, which wouldn't be a bad thing. Doubt it'll happen, though.
No.
In any event, did you watch the game on the EA Sports Cup final?
I got to see pretty much the majority of it. Got to put on in a hostelry in Lahinch.
Oh, yeah. How was your trip?
Oh, it was good.
Good,
yeah.
Trip around Ireland.
Good. So it's always a challenge to get it put on, but I managed to get it put on in a pub in Lahinch, and quite a few other people just started watching it then.
Looked a good game.
It was, yeah. Like, it was a strange one. It was entertaining. Like, Derry, with Grant Gillespie getting sent off and Derry going out of 10 men, probably it changed the whole flow of the game, because I was at the cup match. The FAI Cup match a couple of weeks back, which Dundalk won 3-2, and like it's strange. Like, the last three Derry Dundalk games have finished 2-2 after 90 minutes, and there's a real, there's a sort of Derry have an ability to cause them a lot of problems. But once they were down to 10, as much as they tried to get out, it was very much 11-10, with Dundalk having a lot of the ball but not really doing a huge amount with it. It must be said, I don't think they were that good. They actually in the first half, there was a period in the first half with 11-11 where they actually played much better than they did later on, and I suppose Luke can relate to that. You know, you're playing against a team with a man down, it can be frustrating, because the team with 11 probably thinks it should be on top, and then maybe sometimes try and force things. And I must say as well, it was pretty obvious as well coming through, even just watching on TV, that the wind and the rain and the elements were a factor as well. So actually, like, watching it wasn't like this is high quality stuff, but it was just entertaining because it was a cup final. And it's like it went to pens. I mean, Dundalk's penalties were pretty good. Benson probably just goes to show, you know, you can have 600 points in the Leaving Cert, but you still can't be too clever sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, you try to go for the sort of the...
Your Eurovision knowledge is no good to you now, son. You know.
But Shields with the winning penalty. Like, this is a massive story that's brewing, but it's...
This is the thing, yeah.
Like
before the game, or at halftime, the draw of the game, Jim McLaughlin and Paul Doolan were both on the bench, or on the pitch, and part of that treble winning team, and that is a big narrative here.
It is, and it's just creeping up on people. I mean, if Dundalk win their next three matches, which is Waterford, Shamrock Rovers on Monday, and Sligo Rovers Cup game Sunday week, they're 90 minutes away from a treble, something that hasn't been done in 30 years and has only ever been done once. And the fact that they've had to go to Derry twice as like key stages of that journey adds to it. But I don't know, it's because Dundalk have been so dominant. It's not actually, and they've won, like, say, X amount of leagues and cups in recent years, and they've won the EA Sports Cup a couple of times, that no one's really looking at the collective as a thing. Like, it's Vinnie Parr's first season in charge. He could go into history joining Jim McLaughlin only if that happens. And it's not really, it's just sort of lingering in the background. Mm.
Did you watch the game, Luke? Where were you Saturday night? Do you remember?
At that stage, we were...
Coppers.
Did you actually go all... Like, when did you start drinking on Saturday? Was it all day jobs? Did you sleep at all?
A few hours.
Yeah.
And then we went back out early afternoon. Strict instructions from the manager.
To go back out.
Yeah.
Love it. Love that, Dan. None of this nonsense. Yeah.
No.
Yeah. And so you missed what was a... Well, it was a pretty enjoyable cup final.
Yeah. I do watch all the games on TV, but obviously... Saturday just didn't really fit into the schedule.
He was in his own zone. He's not going to give us any analysis on the game, John. He was pigged at this stage. But like the whole concept of like the Dundalk's probably, I mean, I think it's because, I mean, Rovers are far closer, and you're obviously way closer to the Rovers scene because you were there, and you probably, you know, you'd have probably a lot of friends there still, that it does feel the Rovers are much closer than they were. Yet Dundalk are on the brink of something as well. And
yeah.
It's sort of a strange one. We were talking a bit off air that they haven't necessarily got... There hasn't been much chat about it, I guess.
Yeah, like I think a lot of kind of how people maybe see or judge Dundalk was going to be based on Europe this year, and even though they got through a round, which looking back was even more impressive considering where Riga and stuff got to, but they've just gone under the radar, and like you said, they're on the verge of something pretty special. I do think, though, speaking about Rovers, I do think they are getting close. Like, the league games have shown that. Even maybe last year, the league games would have shown that. But Rovers just needed to find that bit of consistency, which they found now. And like, I'm hoping for a Rovers Dundalk Cup final, which would be
Jesus.
You know,
it's pretty. You played for Bowes as well. It's pretty controversial.
Yeah, not afraid of saying it.
He's burned a few bridges there.
Not afraid of saying it. Yeah. I know. I still have a lot of friends up in Rovers, and you know,
whatever about Bowes.
I have a few friends there as well, believe it or not.
I was thinking of the like, obviously Bows are true now. I was thinking of you giving out about like the amount of people that will want to be in Dalymount. Surely they could, you know, the Connacht Street end. I know it's like a safety hazard, but just throw the Rovers fans there. Bows fans could take a chance on us. I mean, what's the worst that can happen? Imagine, Dan, you could fill the place out, the old Dalymount. There could be 12,000 people at that game.
LOI Wiki does not endorse the breaching of health and safety regulations and endangering Shamrock Rovers fans. I just want to put an important clarification in there.
That was a
statement by Johnny Ward, not affiliated to Airsport or independent.ie in any way. Do not do that.
This is going to be a disaster for tickets. Like,
well, I think by the time, I mean, the away tickets will obviously be allocated in whatever way Rovers choose to do it, but I think with the home tickets, I mean, by the time they look after members and season ticket holders, there won't be... Now, I think you wouldn't have as many tourists coming to the game as you do the Dalymount derbies, because they will book it a while in advance. But yeah, like, I mean, I'm not going to repeat what I said last week, but it's obviously annoying that you're going to turn away thousands of people from a match.
Thousands. Absolutely thousands.
And that's what's going to happen, but it's still going to be an occasion to savour. It's brilliantly poised. It probably is. As much as Rovers got the win in Tala, this is probably annoying. They got the win in Tala and everyone's like, you finally beaten Bowes. It was the last game of the season. But now they have this potential for Bowes to screw over their season again. And it's probably like, so getting beating Bowes at Tala was one thing. Not just beating them at Tala, just beating them full stop was the thing. But now I know right well how I would probably approach it in terms of even previewing the game. It's like, right, well, you've done that, but actually at Dalymount they haven't done it. You know, they have to go to their place.
The place will be
and get this win. And Bowes have this sense of destiny from like the cup semi-final last year, and this was where everything fell asunder. And so they have this sort of redemption mission, and it's Rovers. I mean, it's fantastic. like it's thrilling in terms of the how it's going to be set, but the devastation that the losing camp are going to feel here is going to set them back. Like, this is the problem with Rovers. Rovers have stepped forward this season, right? But if they lose to Bowes in the Cup semi-final, I'm not saying none of that counts, but it's going
exactly
to leave,
where you're
but it's
from.
Going to leave an unbelievably sour taste on their campaign. Whereas actually, if they were to get past that and even lose a cup final to Nadal, I think it would be completely different. I think it would
I
be
want
a
draw
completely different.
And a replay in Tala and the drama that would entail. I should mention...
You'll get your replay, John.
I should mention Bose fan Eric Lawler, my fellow actor. We were both tagged in a Fair City 30 years celebration.
Two comedians anyway.
Where are you going to be? Like Rovers End, Bose End, wherever you can... You know.
Ah, if I could get a ticket, I'd say.
Yeah, we look after
I can't go into the Jody, can I, so?
Nah, you can't go into the Jody.
Nah, wouldn't be the best idea.
No.
I was in the Rovers End earlier on in the year in the first game, up in Daly Mount. But I think what Dan said is important. Like, psychologically for Rovers, after beating them the last day, the monkey's off the back a little bit.
Yeah, but kind of. But, like, the last day is broadly irrelevant, like, because they're not going to beat Dundalk. So, I think the kind
still
of
relevant in the context
to a degree.
Of the
like they had a great
John.
night and all that, but they have to get to a cup final. I think they and I think if Sligo might have some hope in the other one as well. In that, you mentioned Dundalk, they weren't amazing in Derry. Sligo are hitting a bit of form. Obviously scored three against Finn Harps. Showgrounds is going to be hopping as well. Two great cup semi-finals, it has to be said.
Ah, yeah, brilliant. Sligo obviously beat them down there already this year, didn't they? So
That's a long time ago. You really could
see any, you know, any pair of them going through. But I do a fancy Rovers Dundalk final.
To be honest, I think most neutrals would probably want that. As much as it'd be great to see Bowes there as well. Should mention Dundalk. They've conceded 13 goals in the league this season. They've lost two games, and somehow they could win the treble and become somewhat under the radar.
I think that if they got to a cup final, I think that it would suddenly become a much bigger thing.
Yeah.
But it's slipped under the radar now. Like, obviously you've got the Dubs doing an incredible thing, five in a row, but a treble is a massive sporting achievement as well. And I think probably there's a crossover that because now they have the best resources and the best squad, people mightn't think it's like that much of an achievement for them to do it, because I think they almost should be doing it. But what I would say is, like, you know, we're coming up towards the end of the season, award season and so on. I'm not so sure that, like, the Dundalk are going to necessarily be scooping massive awards individually. Daniel Cleary, must mention, got the Player of the Month for August, for his goals and assists. It's only the second Dundalk player this season to actually win it.
Interesting.
Bowes have won more, so there is a feeling that there's individuals elsewhere, where Dundalk really has been the team. And actually what Vinny has done, he's rotated in a way that I don't think a league winner has really rotated before.
That was a big difference from
particularly
Kenny
in terms
well.
Of the but that, if you're talking like what's the difference between, you know, Parrott and Kenny, say, that is something he's tried to do, and they've managed to do it seamlessly. Now you need the players to do it, but they obviously must have a reasonable mentality there that it hasn't put noses out of joint.
Absolutely.
I'm not hearing stories of lads being miffed and
that's a big deal as well, Luke, because I don't know how it's very hard to manage that
massively. Yeah, I hadn't ever really thought of it till Dan said it. Like,
he's just that type of guy. He introduces these new notions all the time.
But yeah, he's obviously done a great job, and his staff have done a great job of keeping people happy. And I suppose the fact that he's been able to dip players in and out, and they've had so many games that I reckon all of them probably look back. They've all probably played close to 20 matches.
Quite a few. Yeah, there really is. So, I mean, there's all the defenders.
Yeah,
you know, and
yeah.
Actually, you would know, like, people would always say you need a settle back four. Yeah. Like, that's one of the great sort of footballing lines. They've had nothing approaching a settle back four, and they're still getting, what, they've conceded 13 goals.
Yeah, I mean, that's a ridiculous stat, to be honest. That is really impressive. And obviously just shows the quality of all the players he's got at his disposal. And look, he trusts them, and they've repaid him.
Fixtures on the big battle in the Premier Division looks to be the battle for Europe, really, at the moment. Third and fourth, very much up for grabs. But the weekend, Cork, Finn Harps, that's a big game for Harps, obviously. Derry City, Bohemians, that's a huge game for the battle for the top four. UCD, Sligo, kind of a must-win for UCD if they're to catch Harps. Waterford against Dundalk, you know, Shamrock Rovers hoping against hope something might happen there.
I think the fact that Waterford are almost safe now, probably, you know, it takes something away. I wouldn't say that the UCD Sligo game was must win for UCD, because they do get the chance to play Harps, but I know what you mean. Like if you look at the fixture list, it's one of those. The only thing is, like, if Dundalk win the league early, which it looks possible that they might do so, then and if say Rovers have a focus on a cup, you suddenly might have games which look very difficult, and they're still going to be difficult because of their squads, of course, you know. But the complexion of the run, I think Bowes played on Dalk on the run in, for example. And the one thing I also should mention, because we're not going to be doing another pod before it, like Dundalk obviously play Waterford on Friday, and if they win that, they win the league by beating Waterford on Monday. But Rovers are playing Bowes on Friday in Dalymount, which is the season defining game. So they're going to Oriel on Monday night, really trying to, okay, there's a psychological blow he can strike, but really artificial pitch Monday night against a team that'll be at full tilt. Do you want to play your best players in that game when you're going to Dalymount 4 days later? Like, what's more important? You know, this is a point. Like, we're building up this big Dundalk Rovers clash.
We tried to get Stephen Bradley on today. He's going to come on at the end of the season. That'd be great if you could ask.
They have a big enough squad to do it. I mean, like, particularly in midfield. But I'm just saying, if you're worried, like, what, like that pitch up there, things can happen. What if you lose Jack Byrne to just a muscle thing or something in that game, and he can't play against Bowes? It's possible that the Dundalk Rovers game on Monday may not be what we expect it to be. You know, it's just a thought.
If it is on Air Sport, I don't know if it is, but we disassociate all Dan's comments there because
it's on RT.
Yeah, it's going to be an amazing game anyway.
Well, for Dundalk, it'll be amazing.
It's a fair point.
Dundalk have a chance to win the league, so it'll be great for them. And I'm sure Rovers would love to like spoil the party, because that's all it is. It's not about Rovers trying to win the league now. Mm. I mean, I think
you mentioned Jack Byrne. What do you make of him against Ireland? For Ireland rather against Bulgaria?
Ah, yeah, he was brilliant. I wasn't really surprised at all, to be honest. Obviously, it was a different game totally to the Switzerland one, but he just really did what he's been doing all year, and it was brilliant. Yeah, it was brilliant, obviously, ever for the league, but I think Dan made the point that he'll probably be in the next squad, and it won't be, you know, the token gesture.
Has your mate Berkey given up on his international ambitions?
No, not at all. No, sure. He's come home now to kickstart his career again, and he's playing well the last while, scored a couple goals, so... He's someone who's got as much talent as a lot of those players, and I'm sure he'd be looking to get back in.
It is interesting. I think it's probably one for like an end of season show. The one thought, like, Rovers have made great progress, but like Jack Byrne has been excellent. That if they do lose him, like, that's going to present them a challenge. I know they have Burke, who can probably slot into, you know, a role very easily, but I think we're talking about the evolution of Rovers, but it's very much linked with Byrne and how good he's been this season. It's the one slight niggling thing that you assume they're going to get closer next year again because they've closed the gap, but potentially losing someone that good,
absolutely,
which they might this winter, could be a massive test for them, you know, because... You now realise how lucky they have been to have a player that quality,
absolutely,
in their squad, and no club can afford to lose players like that and if not affect them.
Yeah, and just we will get the first division to wrap up. What did you make the 21s? Can't let you go without that. Did you see the game?
Yeah, it was class. Yeah, it was just brilliant to see them go and, you know, see them playing the front foot and create so many chances. And I've got wrapped up in the hype of the whole 21s.
Come on, Lukey.
They're just fine at
the
moment.
I think you got wrapped up, Dan, a bit. I think you used the word phenomenal or something.
I thought they were sensational.
Sensational.
But I think, you know, that it still is only under 21s as well. Like, I think...
It was amazing, Lukey, wasn't it?
I don't think I'd be wrong to suggest that, like, I'd say there might be a couple of Irish, like, senior internationals. It might be you getting a bit sick of all the 21s stuff.
Including the manager, yeah.
Going, well, yeah, but I think even for players as well that... I mean, the 21s still have a fair bit to go. Like, they're doing great at that level, which is brilliant. But I think there's an assumption now that, like, if the 21s went out and played the seniors, they'd blow them off the pack or something. Let's just rein that in a small bit.
Good to see Hendrick scoring at the weekend as well, one of the more senior players. But at Lonetown Galway United, this is a difficult one, Dan. The only ground in the League of Ireland I haven't been to. My most local ground to where I'm from, Lissy Wullen.
Are you going?
Saturday night, dead rubber, why not? Think I'll go along, yeah.
Are you?
Yeah. Hopefully, yeah.
I think a round of dead rubber first division fixtures doesn't intrigue me in any degree. I don't really want to preview these games, John.
We have to talk about Lukey lifting the cup, because he hasn't lifted one since when.
Well, so we're previewing a trophy lift. That's what we're doing, right?
How are you going to lift it?
Two hands.
Yeah.
Over the head.
Bray Wanders.
I haven't got much practice, so I'm not sure.
But this is the other thing. Bray and Drogs could have been a massive game. As
yeah, it could have been. This is great. Yeah.
Cove Longford.
This is like looking through your phone book to look at guards you might have gone out with. But you've done on occasion, I would say, John.
Shells Limerick, Wexford, Cavan Teely. All joking aside, I'm looking forward to going back watching Premier Division football in Talca Park next season. I would be sad if Talca, which probably will happen, goes the way of other old football grounds. I think it's great old. Admittedly antiquated, but there's a bit of a magic to it.
Ah, yeah, it'll be rocking next year, particularly, you know, Dublin derbies and stuff.
Against Bows, of course.
That'll be good.
Pats, yeah. Rovers, I mean, we're guaranteed six at home, aren't we? So, like, there's been some great atmospheres there this year against teams that don't necessarily bring a lot of fans, like, you know, Bray at home, and I'm just looking there, who else to be playing at home? Longford, you know, there was some, you know, close to 2,000 crowds there this year, so... looking forward to next year. Yeah,
yeah. The last night I was there as an away fan. The last night I remember when Galway United got into the playoff final. The atmosphere there that night. It's old, but it retains atmosphere like few grounds, I think, you know. And congratulations anyway, and thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
I think that's about it, Dan.
It is, John.
Yeah, that's it. We're coming towards the end of the season. Thanks very much for listening. And thanks to Tommy Barrett. Thanks to Ian Morris. And thanks to Alan Reynolds. That was Season 3, Episode 32.